You're listening to Potato Candy Network. Hello, and welcome back to the Blank Scenario. I am your host, Marie, and we have another segment of Blank Monster this week. In these Blank Monster episodes, I go through two or three monsters in the Monster Manual and give you a couple ideas on how you can use them. We've been working our way A to Z through the Monster Manual 5th edition, and this week we are combining two letters. We're going to be going over letters U and letters V. There are very few monsters in this section. There are only two in the letter U, although we are not talking about the Umber Hulk because I've done a lot of creatures in the Underdark, and I've noticed I've started to kind of get in rut with them a little bit. So we're going to give it an honorable mention and move on to the actual monster we are covering. Both of these monsters, you're going to notice if you've seen the description, you know what they are already. They are very well-known creatures within lore, but there are a couple things that I think make them stand out within game that make them a lot more unique than I think people realize. Both of these creatures have a lot of tropes associated with them that I think can get very overused, but there are ways to reintroduce them into your game that feel unique. So our first monster is the unicorn. Now, when I say unicorn, I know most people think either My Little Pony or Last Unicorn or maybe Harry Potter even at this point. Unicorns have existed for centuries, and even the initial lore where they came from, it's fascinating if you've ever seen that. Unicorns within D&D stick more within the traditional mythology trope than a lot of the more modern takes, I think. One thing that does stand out if you first read their lore sheet is they are celestial beings that are completely unrelated to horses. So this is not a horse with magic. This is a celestial that has been sent for a purpose. They are placed in the world by good deities to protect sacred places. Usually it's a forest, but they might also be protecting an artifact or even other creatures. So if there's a creature that needs protecting that is good, or good deities trying to maybe keep something from escaping, they're going to send a unicorn in order to guard that place. Because of this, unicorns will usually serve woodland or forest deities, but they can actually serve a greater capacity, almost as like a high priest, with the ability of doing miracles and things of that nature. So they can really become a very powerful cleric almost in-game if you really let them. Within the area they're given to guard that becomes their domain, the unicorn will know everything that's going on. The 5e manual actually reads, "Nothing that occurs beneath the sundapple leaves escapes the creature's notice." So it knows everything's going on. If you remember last week with the treant, how they know everything that's going on, this is the same thing, but a bit more of a divine knowledge than just connection. The unicorn does also create a sense of calm within its forest. So all the animals seem a bit more tame than usual. There's a lot less animals you have to be afraid of, and even chaotic creatures such as fae, like sprites, and what was the other one mentioned? Oh, satyrs, which is a really interesting one to mention within the idea of calm. Even those creatures will actually serve the unicorn while in its domain and not cause any problems. That's how powerful these creatures are. They are powerful enough to keep fae in check, which is impressive. And as a unicorn moves through its realm, it is so careful to not disturb its residents, you will not know it's there. It's described as leaving maybe a passing glance and then it's gone. So you get that very traditional idea of something in a distance appears to be a white horse. Maybe there's a horn and there's nothing there now. Speaking of a unicorn horn, that is, of course, the most iconic idea of a unicorn. That is its focus of its power, and it's described as a shard of divine magic. So you can obviously use this as a wand if you're a wizard and get a very powerful channeling item. This can also be ground up to become a potion ingredient or even be used for spells and even magical ink. But you probably don't want to do that because that involves killing the unicorn. Now, Harry Potter logic dictates that that's a bad thing just because in Harry Potter universe, you have the idea of those who feast on unicorn blood can be brought back from the brink of death, but with a cursed life. This is a lot less direct. It's more of if you kill them, realize you're going to be killing off a guardian that a deity has sent for a purpose, and that deity might get mad at you. So unless you want a lot of divine retribution following you for the next couple of sessions, maybe don't do that.
Evil characters probably don't care. Good characters, though, be aware you're causing a lot more wrath than you may want. This was something I hadn't considered as far as actual lore goes, is the idea of a blessed mount. The idea of having a unicorn as a mount, I think it's Lord of Rings, one of the characters gets a unicorn. I don't remember which one. But the idea of having a mount that is a unicorn feels odd because within D&D lore, unicorns are sentient. They are an actual celestial being that can think through things, can logic its way through things, and can strategize. So to become a steed for someone is odd. But the gods will occasionally send a unicorn with a divine purpose to a paladin in order to fight evil if it is that necessary. So this is a divine intervention moment of, it is that bad, you need help, right? Like, this guy's going to be on your side unless he's no longer needed, in which case he'll go back to his forest, or unless you get off track and now you're just doomed. So you can actually have your paladin be gifted a unicorn, in essence, from their deity in order to help fight, which means you have an NPC with a whole lot of powerful magic going to combat. Because a unicorn does have sort of a realm it protects that has layer effects that it can do, and this is going to be specifically within its private layer, not just the area it protects. Within this area, open flames that are not magical are extinguished, so campfire isn't going to light. Lanterns are fine, campfires are a problem. And any native creatures in this area, such as woodland animals, have a much easier time of hiding. So if you chase in, like, you know, a deer into this area, it's just gone. It's just going to be gone. But do keep in mind, unicorns are good creatures, which means healing spells cast by good creatures, such as unicorn or your party cleric, hopefully, do max hit point health. you get max healing off any spells cast, and any creature that has a curse, if they are good, that curse is suppressed. So if you have someone becoming a werewolf, this is where you want to take them, because that'll be suppressed long enough to find help. Unicorns on their own, they're not specially tough, but they have a lot of magic and they do have legendary effects. Plus a lot of just quick once a day teleport away from trouble. So they're not going to be an easy fight unless your party has a lot of magic to fight them back. Within past editions, as far as the variant options go, we do get a Dusk Unicorn. This is from 4th edition. This is going to be your unicorn that has a dark coat and mane with a black horn instead of the classical white and gold. And 4E doesn't describe them as being sent by the gods, but I think it could still work with 5th edition. That the birth of a Dusk Unicorn is regarded as an auspicious omen to the Fae. Dusk Unicorns are more powerful than typical unicorns. They tend to be more of a leader among their own kind. So, again, in times of trouble, this unicorn that's black as midnight shows up, and if you get anyone with Fae knowledge, they know, oh, this is a good sign, but also is a bad sign for us because we're in trouble. They thought we really needed help. So, a couple of ideas for them. The first one is the idea that they are able to suppress curses. So you have a party member or an NPC that's been affected by a curse. Could be even vampirism or a werewolf if you wanted, or just anything that's causing a curse such as bone rot. And they are seeking a healer that's supposed to be able to cure all diseases, right? They get there and they discover this healer is actually a unicorn. So they can't get healing, but they can leave that party member with the unicorn in its lair. And that person will basically go into stasis almost. This curse can't kill them, but they're not really being cured either. So they basically bought themselves time to go find a cure. Maybe the unicorn can help. Maybe it can kind of guide them and allow them passage. I wouldn't make it a major NPC that they're going to travel with, but at least having it to be where they need to find one item the unicorn knows of that can help, and your party member is safe until then. The second option is your party's being sent as an emissary for a High Lord to get healing for his daughter. His daughter is very sick. Nothing's been working. The only known cure is maybe there's a unicorn in the forest that might be able to help. However, one of your party members has been told that they must get help at all costs, which includes bringing back the unicorn horn. Now, you cannot have an evil player do this because it'll be immediately sussed out by a unicorn and they may not even be able to walk into the forest to begin with. So you need to make sure it's not, I'm evil, I'm going to do this. It's, this is the only option. I am beholden by law, by oath, by something. And this might be a path we have to take. If we can't convince a unicorn, if we can't find any third option, I may just have to start a combat to get that horn to bring it back. So it's more of a ill intent than actual evil. And the third one is the idea of this deed, that your paladin has been told by their deity that in order to help in a conflict with this ancient evil or this great evil, whatever big bad you got going on, that they need to find the forest lord who can help them. This turns out to be a unicorn. Now, I would make it fun, make it a dusk unicorn, just because I think that would be cool to say, yeah, you hear about a unicorn, like, oh, we're going to find this unicorn. And you're looking for this white horse somewhere and you don't see it at any point until this black horse with this really like nice silvery mane shows up, right? Basically just flipped it, you know, sun and moon kind of thing. And your party has to agree to a test before helping. I would make this test something that is a moral choice rather than actual physical, because this unicorn needs to know that it is going to be serving with someone who is also good, not just another war that's going on among men. So that is a couple of ideas for the unicorn. They are actually very fun, and especially as a kind of NPC your players can go back to from time to time, could be really good. If you have any druids in a party, that would especially be really fun to have that connection there. Our next one is the only entry under the letter V is vampires. Yeah, you remember when I said we're going to do a lot of classic monsters this week? So these vampires are very much Dracula. They are undead that hunger for life that they've lost, which they satiate by drinking blood. A lot of classic tropes are wrapped up in here. They are burned by sunlight. They don't cast a shadow or have a reflection. And they can be heavily wounded by stake through the heart. They also are bound to the coffin or gravesite where they first woke up, so to speak. If they were not officially buried, then they just have to be under a layer of dirt where they woke up. But they can move that or even split that into multiple places. If you read Dracula, which I just finished, by the way. And that's basically what Dracula did. He took all that earth that he was, quote unquote, buried in and scattered it. And that's where he had to go to rest during the day. So there are a lot of classic tropes within that. But we do have a couple of other ideas within D&D that I think are really unique. The first thing to keep in mind is that any memories they have, if they even have memories, because they might wake up as a vampire with no knowledge of who they were before and just be a vampire. But any memories they have become twisted by undeath. If you remember a couple weeks back, we talked about the slads or slotties that could actually turn people into slods to become basically more soldiers. It's kind of the idea that they are going to start twisting those memories. So love turns into obsession. Friendship might turn to jealousy. You're going to start seeing negative effects from all that. They're going to start surrounding themselves with what they crave in life. So maybe they crave youth, so they're obsessed with a child. Maybe they crave beauty, so they're obsessed with this pretty girl in town. You know, a lot of times art and everything is wrapped up in this because it is the idea of the life they can't live anymore. So they experience that through art and knowledge and books and things. Within 5th edition, any victims of vampires become vampire spawn. So if you're bit by a vampire or if they do damage to you and you die, you will wake up as a vampire spawn. The vampire spawn is completely under control of the vampire that made it. And the only way to turn into a true vampire is for that vampire to allow it to feed on its blood to become a true vampire themselves. However, most vampires aren't likely to do that because that means giving up control of the vampire spawn they create. So the odds of them just creating more vampires is very small. This does mean your players can become vampire spawn, and it even has a little sidebar on what to do for a character stat change, including an alignment shift. Could be very fun if you want to throw your players at Strahd and then say, oh, you were bit? How's your health looking? Right? And just kind of see what happens when players realize, yeah, he didn't come back alive. So vampire lairs typically are grand places. So again, very Dracula-esque. You're going to get this really nice castle or an old abbey that's very defensible, but also big and grand. You're going to see a lot more bats, rats, and wolf in the area, because of course. Plants are going to wither and become very thorny. This is my favorite one. Shadows begin to seem gaunt, and they even move as if they're still alive, which is very creepy to think about. And there's a creeping fog that just clings to the ground and takes on eerie shapes itself. So there's a lot of darkness and gloom going on within their area. So if you think there's a vampire around, you're probably right. The actual vampire stats are very tough. You really don't want to get in a fight with any of these guys. And this isn't even a named vampire stat block. This is just vampire. I don't even want to know what Strahd's look like, because I'm pretty sure he's a 20 challenge rating and normal vampire is 13. So not a good fight. But there are a bunch of weaknesses if your players know what they're doing. Vampires cannot enter into a domain unless invited, which is always nice. If they stop their turn in running water, so not over, but if they're standing in a river, they take damage. Sacred Heart will cause damage and paralyze them. And of course, sunlight sensitivity. So there are a couple of variants. Within 5th edition, you can also include the idea of them being a warrior or spellcaster, whether that was in a previous life or you learned. So if you need a slight twist on it, you can give them a greatsword or let them start casting fireball. Either one works. 3.5 actually gives you a template on how to turn any humanoid creature into a vampire lord itself, which is really cool. So if you're using 3.5, I highly encourage you to look at that, because it gives you all the things that add to them and some of the shifts you have to make to just make a vampire gnome, vampire giant, vampire centaur, whatever you want it to be. And then in 4th edition, we actually have a slight difference that they are not hampered by running water or garlic. All that's a myth. So in your game Running at Home, the idea of how do you kill a vampire is literally any way you want to. It very much holds true. You probably heard Casey mention that before in the show. You can take the 4th edition idea of them not being affected by running water, or the 5th edition, whichever one you think is best for your party. And in order to create more vampires, there's actually a ritual. This is the ritual of, I think it's Ritual of Undying. I don't have that book in front of me. But the blood aspect is not important. They actually have to do a ritual, which will leave them weak afterwards. So vampires don't tend to do very often because of that. So you're not going to get just a run of vampires suddenly because there's too many of them. It really is a very intentional thing to create more vampires, that because vampires are evil, you just don't really want to do very much. So a couple of ideas for our vampires in game that are not Strahd. A lord of a local area has been acting as a vampire spawn for a vampire lord. True vampire has basically been using this actual lore to run things. Now, I will say vampire spawn do have sunlight sensitivity, but they don't immediately die. So I would argue in game you could have a vampire who is still running around during the day that's at least a vampire spawn, just as a cover. It would be tricky, but I think you could manage it or make it to where they just aren't seen as much kind of thing, right? So this vampire has a lord acting as a spawn, and the vampire decides, I'm going to turn them into an actual vampire because I want to move on. But this area needs to be controlled because whatever reason he has. So your party has to discover that this lord is a vampire, has just become a vampire, and also destroy them or kill them without the law getting involved. Because here's a problem. If you kill a vampire, what happens to a body? Yeah, the cleric might show up and say, well, it looks like they were possessed or something like that. But this was a very important person in society. They probably had a lot more political contacts than you did. So you're going to have a hard time explaining that one away. So this one is a little bit of intrigue, as well as we need to find a monster and kill it. The second option is a local town has had a epidemic of death and then grave robbing within the town. And the party needs to figure out the vampire and why they're causing it. So I mentioned before vampires kind of get twisted in undeath as to how they feel about things. So you could have this be a vampire who was slighted by the town, or maybe even a vampire that loves to see destruction. Whatever reason you want it to be, this vampire is slowly tearing the town apart until it's going to be too late and they can just run into town and just slay everyone. So this is going to be a very strategic vampire. This is a vampire that has no issue with patience because he's got all the time in the world. Why is he rushing? So your party really isn't going to have to be rushing discovering things. It's just going to be, are they going to be able to save that one NPC they really like? And the third option is that there's a druid outside of town that is actually being accused of being a vampire. That people have said they've seen it at night. There have been bats attacking people. people have been bit and seemingly have almost contracted vampirism. And so this druid is being accused of that and being hunted down. This druid is just a Circle of Stars druid, so of course they're at night because stars. But an actual vampire has decided, hey, this is a great witch hunt that is getting the heat off of me and where I'm at, and he's using it as cover for his own actions. So your party will be investigating this druid, not knowing it's a druid, but also having to figure out what else is going on in town. They might realize, oh, it's just a druid, guys. It's literally all this is. So they have to convince the town, rather than go on this witch hunt, to actually try to find the vampire before it's too late. So that one is going to involve a little bit more social aspect because you need to convince people to listen to you when everyone in town is just afraid. So that is going to be our two monsters this week, or I guess creatures technically. We have the unicorn and the vampire. And I also realized as I was writing out the notes for this episode, this is the first one I think I've done where I could have both in game, because a vampire could be your big bad that you're trying to fight. Not Strahd, but something like that. And you're going to get a unicorn to assist you. So you could actually have both of these in the same session if you wanted to, which would be kind of cool. So that is going to be it for this week. If you have any ideas on how to use vampires in your game or unicorns, or if you've used them before, let me know, because I think they're still very fun monsters to use, even though they have a lot of history and mythology and within D&D. But that doesn't mean you can't use them still. So let me know what you've done with them. Let me know what you'd want to do with them. And I will see you next week.
Hello, Bob Spuds here on the scene once again, reporting for Potato Candy Network. Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. If you have a scenario prompt you want us to use, send it to us on social networking with Instagram and Facebook at Potato Candy Network. And if you really liked us, consider supporting us on Patreon for bonus content monthly, such as behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, inspirations, and future episode previews. Check out our brother show, Dreadful Tales, for some top-pinching, full, truly terrifying tales of terror. Got that on the first try, you know. And finally, please leave us a review, as it helps your recommendations and helps others find the hard work we do here at Potato Candy Network. Oh, and friendly reminder, if someone asks you if you're a god, don't think of marshmallows. Nobody likes that guy.